It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Cofield & Company, Battleborn, you heard it. Justin is in. Alex White is here as well. What's going on, buddy?
No, I've been all over town today. I barely made it back on this side of town in time.
All right. Please grow the beard back.
It's not growing. This is 10 days? Come on. Okay. I'm on my way.
All right. Were you on last week? I don't keep track of the show when I'm off. I disappear.
I was.
With Big Greg?
Yes.
Salerno? You look. Yeah, I know. I was getting to that.
Okay.
So you guys have met before?
We've met.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to hear us at all talking about her success in Last Man Standing?
No. Are you doing well?
In the past?
Yeah.
Talk about 2023.
I did.
How much was the purse?
So, $100,000.
Okay.
It was a college football Last Man Standing Stations contest. And then in 2023, I entered the March Madness contest, and I split it with three other people. That one was $50,000, and we split four ways, so.
Okay. So, yeah. Did you release your secrets on your, what's
trying to get somewhere?
Yeah, exactly. So, what's your method?
I mean, I've been pretty open about it. I have my own power ratings, and I adjust throughout the season. So I keep up on the teams, you know, you're checking box scores, making sure everybody played. You always want to see where the line closed because you want to trust those other really good sports bettors, right? So if I make a game 7 and it closed -9.5, why did they have them favored by so much more, right? And then they win by 2 touchdowns. It's like, okay, I have to adjust that.
Yeah.
I only had them as a 1 touchdown favorite.
So do you share your power ratings? Is this like a newsletter I could be a part of?
For family and friends.
Okay. All right. That's it. Better than what I'm working with. We just had a fantasy draft over the weekend, and Cofield saw how prepared I was. I had actual paper. I got computers. I got iPads. I was not prepared at all. Yeah. And I was just like, okay, let me find my sleeper packet. Pull that out. And I'm like, I guess we're picking this person.
It's almost worse when you bring too much, but you haven't already gone through it, because then you don't even know where
100%.
To look. Right? And then you're trying to catch up. So what did they rate you? Because I know every app kind of... rates your draft. Where'd you fall?
B plus.
Okay.
Which was ridiculous. I got a B plus as well.
Yeah.
Let's get to this in about 5 minutes.
Okay. All right.
Because Alex is in a female celebrity league coming up at Circa, which I want to hear about. And then she can give us advice, because I feel like we had some troubles.
Yeah.
You generally don't have troubles. I have troubles for different reasons because I'm psychotic.
Yeah.
And I had troubles again. But I got to start out with something important here. I'm trying to get in a little better shape, so I'm trying to avoid snacks.
Okay.
And then it got me going today when Griffin, where'd you find the snacks, the Raiders snacks video?
That one I have to shout out to to a Lotus Broadcasting producer, Ari. He told me, hey, do you know what's a perfect Cofield & Co. Topic? The Raiders just put out a snack list for their players. So shout out to Ari.
Okay. All right, well, so they bring some players on the video. They start talking about snacks. So fire one.
Biggest snacker, Bernie. Amari Bernie.
Amari Bernie is the biggest snacker on the team.
Definitely me. I love candy, chips. I'm a big junk food fan.
Yummy.
J-Rob, kind of fat, always eating cookies and shit.
Andre James, he's a big boy, and I can just tell that he probably has a lot of snacks on him.
It's easy, without a doubt. No questions asked. John Jenkins.
Biggest snacker on the team? I'm going to have to say me. Jackson Powers Johnson.
That'd probably be Jackson, too.
Okay. So there's a mix there of offensive linemen, some other guys calling him fat. What's our most evil snack?
I mean, are we assuming the snack has a definition of, like, junk, bad for you food?
We're not doing healthy. I love rice cakes. I'm out of control. We're not doing that.
Well, I'm very limited these days in my snacks because I went on a keto diet, and that's just, you can have some dark chocolate, you can have some almonds with the dark chocolate. Very limited. You can have some popcorn. So, and I like snacks, but I'd say overall anything with chocolate and peanut butter can get me. Whether that's a cookie, whether that's a Reese's, those are my downfall. Chocolate peanut butter.
Alex?
Oh, I'm definitely a snacker. So any chips and then candy too as well.
Hard candy?
But I try to make good choices, you know, kind of like you're saying. So there's certain kinds of chips that you can get, those veggie chips.
Are those healthy?
A little bit better for you.
Are they really healthy?
Eh.
They're a little bit better, but have you seen these? I actually think they're decent. These are for like the sort of keto or high protein people, low carb people. They're protein chips. They're made out of chicken, typically. And
really?
What's different about them is like the first one tastes good, but it's not something that you end up continuing to crave as you're going. After you've had about 10 or 12, you're like, okay, I'm done with these. Like now it's too much. So like the 13th chip does not taste better than the first, which is the opposite of normal chips. So that's like if I'm on planes, you can actually find those at the airport now. I think the brand's Wild with an E. Oh. And you can find them there and you can get them, but you will not eat the whole bag because
really
it turns to a different taste after too many.
Southwest switched their pretzels.
Yeah.
I like them. When's the last Southwest flight you went on?
I'm always on Southwest. Okay. Southwest is my number one.
Did you get the pretzels? The seasoned pretzels?
I never get the pretzels.
Very good.
Not that's carbs. That's empty carbs. I don't take those.
I didn't say I was cutting out carbs.
No, I plan when I travel now. I plan my snacks. I bring my snacks. It's a keto friendly low net carb protein bars. It's popcorn is like a real good go to for me. It does have carbs, but it's okay. It's a better version of carbs. Net carbs a little low. And then they have what they call like keto bark, which is dark chocolate and almonds or hazelnuts. And it works in a pinch, you know, but it's better than nothing. And it can take away somewhat of the craving. But, you know, in my pre-diet days, Reese's.
That peanut butter and chocolate.
Chocolate chip cookies.
What about beef jerky? That's a
Oreos.
Great snack, right?
I always do have you know, what is it? Chomp has all those different versions, a turkey stick or a chicken, beef, buffalo, bison. You know, I always have those in my little travel backpack as well. Again, the interesting part is when you're eating restrictively like that on a low carb, high protein, high fat sort of diet, is you don't continue to crave the food you're eating. So like I'll bring like four or five sticks, but you eat one, you're like, that's enough. Like I don't want any more of this. So it doesn't have the same enjoyment as snacking the bad stuff, which is like the third Reese's Pieces tastes just as good as the first one.
So Gardner Minshew on this video was really weird. We don't have it, but he was really weird. He was like, I don't really follow the dietary habits of my teammates. I don't even think that's good. Like he sounds whacked.
He is.
I'm trying to figure him out.
Oh, you're going to be diving down a rabbit hole. Didn't the dude live in a van for a year?
Well, that doesn't mean you have to always sound like you're freaking. You just
the people who decide to go live in a van for a year are those people. That's what they sound like before they get into the van.
Okay. Like, you got to be really chill to live in a van down by the river.
Yeah.
Not everyone is Farley throwing himself through tables, very fired up. It's the opposite. You got to be chill.
Yeah. You know, and Washington State, you know, my brother went there. It's very prevalent there.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm trying to figure out Minshew. I have no idea if he put this video together, someone else did. I mean, it. I don't know if you watch this, but it's him working out. Can we fire the backing music here? Do we have? I hope we have this. He's rocking the mullet, right? Then he's shirtless, so he's got the chest hair. I'm trying to figure this guy out. First of all, let's ask the room. One, I'm going to go with the chest hair first. Chest hair and hair. He's got a shave down. You can see that. He's not like 1970 guy. Is that back in? I feel like we're always going back and forth on chest hair and hair on the male body.
There is a lot of back and forth. I think that's fine. Like you said, it's like shaved down.
All right.
Yeah.
I think
probably helps if you have like a washboard stomach. If you got a big belly, then, well, yeah. I don't know what you do at that point. Yeah. Like they're like, I don't want to look at that period, whether it's smooth or not.
I mean, I think I don't know this, you know, I have a lot of chest hair, but it's shaved down, sort of similar, not a similar build as it meant you, but, I've always, that's just what's comfortable for me. And I always thought that the latest craze was to be like completely shaved down and like no hair.
That's stupid. Counterproductive.
But I'm not willing to invest that kind of time into my.
You can't do it. I'm not, you know, it's not like, hey, Justin, take your shirt off. Like, I know that would be so much maintenance.
Yeah.
You're a dad. What's the freaking point?
But
you don't need to do workout videos running around with a smooth chest and stomach to freaking Creed music.
I want
to
be.
I know you don't need to.
I want
to
be fast in the water. No, but I think what I learned through the whole Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce news cycle that got into my algorithm, and I promulgated it because I watched every video. And I was like into it. Is that the women who were commenting, especially when Travis Kelce was like, I'm the big Yeti, I got chest hair, and they were like, yes. Like, yeah. It was not, oh, that's gross. It was like,
thank you,
in
Taylor.
Favor.
Thank you, Kelce brothers, too.
Yeah, exactly.
That was impressive when Jason was shirtless and jumping out of the booth, and he's got the, you know, a little bit of a belly at 290 playing football. That was good. That helps all of us.
I agree.
That helps all of us. So I don't know. Minshew Mania is going to be a wild ride as long as he stays in there. I hope he stays in there.
Me too. I love it. I'm with the mullet too. I think that's fine. I think
that one's interesting because we know you have a beard guy.
Yeah.
Let's take this off the table. You and I can't grow. We'd have to grow a skullet. And it would take a long time.
Yeah.
I actually came across a really interesting conversation today. I was around a mom. I was doing a TV appearance today. The host of the show was asking about her son, who's in fourth grade, who has a mullet. And then she mentioned something about we had to find the right hairstylist. I'm like, what is going on here? Does it have to be that? First of all, are fourth graders like, mullet?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes.
And then are there hairstylists who are like, I'm all about the mullet.
They got it dialed in, yeah. This is the thing, yeah.
Grew up in Mississippi. Let's go.
Well, and you know what's funny, too, is I always associated it with the fact that this has become a hockey town, and there's a lot of young kids who are in hockey. And it just so happens that most of the kids that I know, you know, I got a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, and their friends who are into that mullet world are kind of hockey players or hockey adjacent. So you do see it. It is a thing, but I'd say, you know, most of the haircut that all the kids are doing that are around my kids for boys is the poof.
These kids these days with the haircuts.
It looks better than our days, which was shaved sides and whatever hair was flopping down. I think it's a better look than that, but they do.
Talk about your own day. You're younger than me. I had Flock of Seagulls hair. I had the big swoop in the front, and I tried to grow a little mullet, but it would just curl middle of my neck. I'm like, I can't grow it out.
You guys had the worst. The 80s stuff was a no-go, you know?
Be too harsh, come on.
Yeah, but they have all the poofied out, like they perm their hair,
okay,
and then they poof it out into this, like, what looks like a toadstool sort of character.
I've seen it.
And I talked to my daughters about it, and they're like, oh, his hair is so nice. And I'm like,
what?
I think he looks like a clown. Like, I don't think this is a good thing at all. I mean, he's got great hair to work with, but I don't agree with what he's doing with it.
Well, and that's part of the problem. We can't analyze it because we're also jealous. We're like, you have hair, and that's what you're doing with it. What is wrong with you? Alex is here. It's Justin. We come back. We're going to get to fantasy football. Alex has a big female draft coming up over at Stadium Swim. Justin and I just did a draft. It was a nightmare on many fronts. But I did wean some knowledge out of it about who has value, who people are going gaga for. So we're coming back here with Justin Watkins, Battleborne Injury Lures, on a Wednesday.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Alex White is here as company. Justin Watkins, of course, in his studio, Battleborne Broadcast Center. All right, Alex, so what's going on coming up at Circa Stadium Swim? You've got is it all females?
All females, yes.
Okay.
Women in fantasy football. It was a buy-in, so there is some money that can be won here. But yeah, they have drafts going on all weekend. It is the Las Vegas Fantasy Championships Circa presents. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you do a daily show. And even weekends at South Point Studios. You've won last man standing in football and basketball. You come from a family where your grandfather was probably handicapping, I don't want to say he's old, but maybe back to the 50s, maybe earlier. How old is he? I always love when people don't know ages. I know everyone's age.
Yeah.
I know.
So let's just say I'm going to go 80 something.
Yeah, he is 80. But so he was friends
with
Roxy
40s?
Too.
Okay, so we're looking at, like, he could have been handicapping at, like, 13 years old, like 1959.
Yeah, he was.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're going 65 years of white family football knowledge. You're the favorite. I will. I don't want to take action because I don't know who these other people are, but you're the favorite.
I mean, some of them are coming back for numerous years. There's the winner from last year. So
do you win every league you're in?
No, I don't, actually. And it's funny, talking off air. Like, last year I had two really good drafts in the two leagues I was in, like, projected one. And I made it to the playoffs, but I didn't win either of those because I do get a little caught up. Like, I drafted this team. He's going to do better, instead of making trades. And you have to be very active in fantasy football.
Yeah, no, that's what I always find to be my mistake in the years that I lose is usually that's the year I felt the best about my draft. And the years that I win is the years that I'm like, I don't know what to do. Oh, he didn't produce week one. Who's available? Boom, pick somebody up and they start producing, you know, and I keep them in and I don't care that I drafted somebody in the fourth round and they're sitting on the bench. I just care about production.
So I don't know if you just said the rule. So straight draft, right? Not money auction.
Straight draft. The interesting thing is there's no trades. So we're doing 20 rounds, which I actually am kind of excited about. Yeah. I think this might
That's
be better
for me. That's where you have an advantage. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm really thinking I'm going to do some research tonight. But yeah. I'm thinking how many quarterbacks do we do have the free agency each week, though.
Okay.
So, and we'll have like a set amount of money.
No trades.
But no trades.
Okay.
So still just two quarterbacks to start?
With 20 roster spots?
Three.
You got to have three.
Take a chance on a rookie.
Yep.
Or someone who's, you know, kind of down the list on the quarterback list.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, PPR, do you get points for receptions?
Yes, I believe so.
That matters. Give me the strategy. What's your strategy in a league like this?
PPR? Man, so, you know my strategy has always been in our auction league, I'm going to go pay whatever I have to pay for the two best receivers. I'm going to get two of the best four. That's like my rule. I'm getting two of the best four, even if I think that best receiver is a tight end. Like, I'm getting that. And my philosophy has always been, especially for tight ends, that there's like a three and then there's a huge gap. And I have never felt that has been the case on the running backs, where I feel like the 17th running back isn't necessarily not going to be a top five running back. They could. And I felt like the 10th tight end was never going to be number one. And it had sort of continued for years. But when I looked at the draft this year, I was like, these receivers are all interchangeable from like 1 to 40. Like,
There's
10 tight ends.
I think there's 10 tight ends who are 700 to 900
yards.
Yes,
exactly. So this draft, I was like, I don't care about a tight end. I'm not paying for a tight end. I'm going to put them off to the side. And boy, did I pay for it. I did not get a tight end. My first tight end was on the pup. It's Hockenson. Yeah. I paid for that. But my thought was, everybody's going to wait for me to bid up the receivers because I do it every year. I'm going running back. And so I went in on Breece Hall. I expected he was going to cost $70. We have a weird budget, but his budget target in our app was like $70. I was willing to pay the $70. I wasn't going to pay in the 80s. I wasn't going to go too high, and I got it for 62. So I'm like, wait a minute. Now I could do another running back that I wasn't ready to do maybe a little bit earlier because I have an extra $8 in my pocket. And then I got Kyren Williams. I did pay for Ja'Marr Chase. And that meant that, you know, I was very active in the first 45 minutes of our draft. And then I sat around for like 3 hours because there's really nothing I could do.
12 teams?
12 teams.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hear it was like 18 teams of 20. So I
would still go running back. PPR, I would go running back.
What's your strategy? Are you thinking about it? What are you going to do?
I think you made some great points there. I mean, there is a list of wide receivers that I would be very comfortable getting pretty far down the list, right? And then tight ends, I think 10 is stretching it a little bit because I've always thought there was like five and then it's a drop off. So now I would say maybe like eight with the Dalton Kincaid or, you know, Dawson Knox, those two in Buffalo or some other guys kind of slipping in there now. But I think 10's a lot. But I do think running back, I think there is a distinct three or five up there, right? And I think Breece Hall is one of them.
Well, PPR changes it. We're in a league where receptions don't count. So, yes. Obviously, guys who are active out of the bat, like Derrick Henry again, and he went for a good number in a rushing league, but if receptions count,
right,
you're kind of dead in the water. Quarterbacks, and this is where the draft that we did, I stink. I got Dak Prescott. Like, I don't want Dak Prescott. I like him. I think he's going to be awesome. But you can get a 3,300 yard quarterback at like the 16th quarterback.
I agree with that.
Are you going to go crazy over a quarterback early?
Well, you tell me. Okay, so now that I've told you these, what would your strategy be?
Mine would be about, kind of what I was trying to do in our league. I would go, I actually would go earlier with running backs, and I would try to get one awesome receiver, and then I would play on receiver depth. And I'll wait. I'll wait forever for a quarterback.
Me too.
I mean, I'm not going to go. You know, I'm not going to wait for number 22. I have Baker Mayfield as a backup. I don't want him as my starter. But the thing is, right. In that league, if you're going to take three quarterbacks, I think you could get like the 14th quarterback, the 17th quarterback, then a flyer.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, make sure you get someone close to the first quarterback because that they're not great, but at least you're protected a little bit.
Well, and there's
I go back and forth every year on am I going to go? I've traditionally been like running back. Ho, I love like the most expensive or high draft pick running backs. This year I backed off a little bit.
But I think this year in particular on the quarterbacks, I devalued the quarterbacks too. I didn't look at the top like five even. I was like, where in this 8-12 area is somebody who has top five capability? And to me, my target was Joe Burrow. He was number 9 on the list, and I was like, dude, he can go. But by the time he came around and I was ready, several others were ready too. They were ready for that very moment. So then my next one was Kyler Murray. He was in that 8-12, and I'm like, dude, he could be number one. He could, you know, like I don't think he will, but he has that potential to reach that. And if I could get him for $10 instead of paying $35 for Jordan Love, I feel better about my pick. Again, there was Adam was waiting. Adam had decided that was his quarterback pick and was going to be his quarterback pick. And if you do this league with Adam, he always has more money than everybody else because he waits to spend. So I ended up with, and I overspent for him, I ended up with Caleb Williams, which is just high risk. But I sort of backed it up with Kirk Cousins, where I feel like, I can bank 4,000 yards. I probably have that with Kirk Cousins if he stays healthy. I should be okay there. But I might have a home run with Caleb Williams if he. But the problem is we were watching the Bears preseason game as it goes on. I'm like, that's an excellent throw. Let's bid this guy up.
I kept pointing to it. I'm like, whoa, look at that pass. Trying to drum it up more. I wanted him too, but I took myself out of the mix with Dak.
I mean, I paid $18 for him, and he's valued in our draft stock stuff for $6. So that's why I got the C+. I got A's on everything else. On quarterbacks, I got a D because they said I overpaid so much for my quarterbacks.
How did Trevor Lawrence do in you guys' draft? Did people want him or?
He went for fair value. I think he went for like $10.
Wow.
So, I mean, I probably would have taken him too. Again, he's in that sort of 8-12 range of somebody who could launch themselves in that top five conversation. He was there. I got Kirk Cousins for $2. And I'm like, dude, he could be. Mm-hmm. He has been.
And he has a ton of weapons.
Yes, he has a ton of weapons.
I threw him. You bid me up. I wanted him.
Yeah, you bid $1. I got him for $2.
But at that point in the draft, you could get guys for $1.
So. Yep.
These people could all be your league, and Alex White's with us. It's Justin Watkins. By the way, can I give you a heads up? I think I gave you bad information on the rundown. I would like you to stay the whole hour because we have stories if you have the extra time, but don't answer now. He may just be gone at 4:45. If you've got some newbies who haven't played a lot of fantasy football, what you hope for is quarterbacks. They take some quarterbacks early.
Yes.
And then the other one is if people start taking kickers, like the fourth or fifth round, you're like, hallelujah.
Yep. Or defense. You guys got defense in that league or no defense?
Yes, defense.
Early. Somebody takes a fifth round defense. Like, I'm going to get the number one defense. Like, go for
good
it.
Job, right? Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Or you'll see like two quarterbacks for the same team in the first six rounds.
Yeah.
You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah. My mistake was I think I was okay until I took my second receiver and I paid for him, Nico Collins. That was a mistake. He might have a great year, but he's also in a group of 20 receivers that all have that same potential, and I paid for it. And like that's where I sort of, I think once I lost that budget, then I knew tight ends were going to be, I was the last one to draft a tight end. Renee was. So second to last to draft a tight end. My first drafted tight end doesn't even play for 8 weeks. And my second drafted tight end, I mean,
oh boy,
it's Kmet. Come for $2.
He also makes me nervous because he's on one of those teams, like we were talking about, a lot of mouths to feed.
Yep.
There in Houston. What is how is Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua going right now in fantasy? Right? Is
Kupp
Puka Nacua going first?
Yes, by a lot.
Kupp was super cheap, which depressed me because I 1,000% going in said I'm getting him.
Me too.
And then you find out more and more about Puka. Jeff Erickson was on yesterday and he's like, I'd beware on with his injury and his injury history. So that could flip around really quickly, and then people are, you know, getting Puka way too high or paying way too much for him.
Yeah, he was specifically stricken out on my list. I'm like, I am not paying for Puka. Like, this is crazy where he's listed.
Right.
And Cup is down here, and if he could be afforded down there, I'm going for him. He went higher than the number they had him for, but it's still affordable.
Puka or Cooper?
Cooper.
Yeah, I think he's going to bounce back with a great game.
Me too.
Yeah.
And there's never enough mouths to feed. Like, they throw so much. They're so aggressive. We'll come back. More Justin Watkins, Alex Whiteson. As the company, we're live here at the Battleborne Broadcast Center.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
You know, specific to the comments that were made by Tua, I'm happy, genuinely happy, genuinely happy for the success that Tua's had, and I really wish him nothing but the best.
This is a crazy scenario. First of all, Tua coming out talking about a former coach but still an active coach in Brian Flores and kind of blasting him. That starts the whole discussion about should coaches be different now, or is Tua just a big wuss, right? So we had that discussion yesterday. We can do that again in a couple minutes. But the fact that Flores spoke on it, did you think that was a little bit weird, Alex, that he actually came out the next day to respond to someone basically saying he's a creep and an awful person?
No, I appreciated it. I thought he handled it very well. I thought it was really genuine. So, I mean, I think that's better, right? We were talking about accountability. So he's kind of taking, no?
Well, from the lawyer perspective, I was like, facepalm, dude, why are you doing this? Like, my reading of his comments, he totally gave credence to what Tua said. He did not dispute any of it. Said, I'm growing, right. I'm going to do better, I'm going to do all this stuff. So it's like, if you are basically admitting that you were a destructive, verbally abusive type of person, then your lawsuit looks really bad.
And the lawsuit is what? Wrongful termination?
Right.
Against the Dolphins?
Exactly.
Okay.
And racial discrimination based on, wrongful termination based on racial discrimination, right? Like, I was fired. I was not provided the same standard as a non-black head coach was provided in your organization. And when evidence like this comes out and it's like, hey, man, if I'm in charge of the Dolphins, I say, I have a choice here. Do I want lawsuits from players for being mistreated, or do I want to fire a coach? And so I decided to fire the coach. And the players now are backing up that this was a problem, and you just validated it.
One player, though.
Right.
Can't the Flores side call witnesses, maybe not on the Dolphins now, to back up Flores and go, Tua's a wimp. I love being coached by Flores. He wasn't abusive. I don't know what Tua is talking about. He's lying!
Then why does Flores say he needs to do better? Why does Flores say he needs to grow? Why does Flores basically admit to past mistakes and he would do things differently?
Yeah.
He says all of that. So, yeah, throw a bunch of people and go, I thought he was awesome. You know, that's the kind of coach I want. I want to be motivated. I thought he did a great job. And then I just keep putting up there over and over again. His quote.
He said it. He needs to get better.
He needs to grow. So if he needs to get better and he needs to grow, sounds like he wasn't ready yet to be a coach.
Mm, okay.
And so why is it wrong to terminate somebody who's not yet ready by their own admission to do the job that needs to be done?
So you're also putting a match to the Belichick tree.
Yeah.
Everything Belichick sucks. That's another side story.
Yeah.
I never thought about this angle that Stephen A. Smith suggested strongly that this was a complete work by Tua and Lebatard on behalf of the Dolphins. Fire this.
I don't think it's an accident that Dan Lebatard asked him when he asked him. Again, you connect dots. And if you're Miami and you're the NFL, when you got a case pending against you, you're looking for an advantage. Tua provided it. I'm saying that's the reality.
Okay.
The intriguing thing here is Tua is an active member of the Dolphins. So was he doing his owner and the organization a solid? Okay. This is a media guy suggesting that another media guy is basically bought and paid for and is doing a work on behalf of the Miami Dolphins.
I don't quite go all that way with it. I think the most likely scenario, having been involved in things like this in the past, is something along the likes of Tua, you told us you had problems with Brian Flores before. You told us all these stories before. Is that something you're willing to say publicly? Maybe he says yes, maybe he says no. He says yes. Okay. Call up Dan Le Batard. Hey, he's willing to talk about the Brian Flores stuff, so if you ask him about it, he'll talk about it. I don't think he's bought and paid for. I think I would want to know that if I were in your shoes, right, Steve?
Le Batard's developing a little reputation of late.
Sure.
There's a problem here. There's a problem here.
Careful. Careful, Steve.
A lot of cooperation.
Careful, Steve.
Allegedly. Justin Watkins coming back in just a couple minutes here. We'll close out the 4 o'clock hour. A little more on Brian Flores and Tua. There's a lot more depth to this than people would believe. But, yeah, Justin thinks that Brian Flores probably put his foot in his mouth when he responded to Tua saying he was mean and a terrible person and admitted that he has to get better and maybe his communication skills weren't great. And then Stephen A. Smith is accusing Dan Le Batard and Tua of basically working for Stephen Ross to help his case. By the way, can I come back with Dan Le Batard used to work for ESPN. How do I know that ESPN brass didn't go, hey, Stephen A., here's a chance to crush Le Batard. F him. He talks about us all the time. Do it, Stephen A. And Stephen A. is like, okay, company man.
Anything can happen.
Right?
Sure. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah. I get in trouble for this? What did
no,
I say?
No, no. Okay. No.
I mean, I try to be very, very, very good. Careful.
You,
believe
you
me.
You said, how do I know? You right. don't. Right? We don't know.
Wow. Okay.
I need to start thinking like a lawyer more. Because I jumped in and then he right away was like, wait, not from a lawyer standpoint, this is bad.
That's why
yeah, from
mom.
A human perspective, it's great.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, it's exactly what you want to hear from a human perspective.
Yep.
You know, he didn't trash him. He didn't go low. He didn't, you know, he owned up to his side and wished him the best. But, you know, when you have ongoing litigation, this is why everybody always says, we don't comment on ongoing litigation because anything you say during that time could be put up on a poster board when, you know, push comes to shove.
I'll give you a couple things. One, this is a racial discrimination suit.
Yep.
If I'm an African-American player on the Dolphins or around the league, Tua can go F himself if this was a work. Because he may have just taken down Brian Flores. Secondly, if I'm a coach around the league and hard coaching is my thing, I never want Tua on my team. You cross the line, brother. Or else, let me say it better, brother.
I don't think he was worried about it after the contract.
Well, you're right. He's got security in his contract right. with the Dolphins for now. He right. is going to want a second contract when he's in his 30s. There are going to be people who hold a grudge against him.
I don't know. I mean, I would say that's another – this one's from a human perspective. Like, are you really going to hold something against somebody who – unless you feel like he's lying and – how would you accuse him of lying when Brian Flores just validated everything he just said? So unless you think he's lying, how are you going to get mad at somebody for telling the truth about what they went through?
Flores had a weak moment. He got guilty.
Yeah.
I coach the way I want to coach.
Okay. So
these guys are getting too soft, and I don't need Tua bad-mouthing the whole coaching fraternity.
So
you keep it in-house.
So Brian Flores is allowed to make a mistake, but Tua's not? Brian Flores is 25 years older than Tua. And he's making mistakes in media, and that's okay, and that's just brushed off. But if Tua makes a mistake with the media, which I don't think he did, but if he did make a mistake with the media in, you know, 24, that's not okay. He's supposed to know better than a 45-year-old? Come on, man. I mean, not to say that it may not happen. I understand your point. Maybe some people hold it against him, you know, 10 years from now when he's trying to get his next or last contract. But I don't think he did anything wrong. So long as he's telling the truth. Now, if he somehow got convinced to go out there and make a public statement that was not true or exaggerated any facts, he didn't give any facts. He didn't give any facts. He just said, how would you feel if every time you came here, you got denigrated? And, you know, he didn't say Brian Flores denigrated me and said X, Y, and Z. He didn't state a single fact. He just asked how you would feel if every day you woke up feeling this way.
That is some good lawyer write up.
I agree.
I'm sure Tua was like, yeah, got that memorized.
No,
anything for Boss Ross.
No, you think it's part of the contract negotiations? Like, yeah, we'll guarantee it all, but I'm gonna need you to read this statement. Yep.
Coach Cofield ain't having any of this.
It didn't come across.
I'm old school.
It didn't come across to me as read or rehearsed. It did not.
So the whole discussion that broke out the last couple of days was managing and how you manage people and how do you like to be managed, right? Would you, what Tua described is kind of being beat up every day. How would you deal with that? Have you had to deal with that? Have you had bosses who are like, you're terrible, this sucked, every day?
No.
But I'm trying to build you up, though.
I have not. Okay. And I coached cheerleading, so it was a little bit different.
That's right.
You had to be a little bit more fragile, right?
Let's come out right here. You were coached at UNLV. There had to be someone who was a terror. Spill the beans right now.
Don't do that.
He's like, don't take Cofield's bait. He's a lawsuit creator waiting to happen.
Do not do that. I think the greatest leaders are the ones who can get the most out of each individual personality type and what drives them and doesn't drive them. I do not believe the greatest leaders have a cookie cutter approach that applies to everybody. So I would say, I've had some ones that I thought were tough. I especially in some of my earlier days of working where I felt like I don't know that I necessarily respected the point of view that they came from where they started on or their own experience level, or they were in a position to tell me, how life was. But I also was raised in a way that, like, if your boss or your teacher tells you you're not doing something wrong, I'm not supposed to question that. I'm supposed to get it right. Like, that's how I was raised. I'm not even saying that that's the right way. That's just how I adapted, and that's how I worked my way through it. But it's also when that push came to shove later, when I had an opportunity to leave later, I didn't stay. I left. Like, okay, I did what you needed me to do, but I'm gone. And I don't know that those people ever knew that they were bad leaders, because maybe everybody acted like me and just pushed through it and didn't tell them.
Yep.
I think the best leaders are the ones who give clear expectations and evaluations of what is to be successful at their place of business or their industry. And that way, if you're not meeting it, you fired yourself. I didn't fire you.
Maybe everybody pushed through it. That's a great jumping off point for the federal lawsuit filed by De'Erica Hamby of the Sparks, formerly of the Aces, against Becky Hammond and the Aces. I said last week, there's not going to be a player on the Aces who's like, you know what, De'Erica, workplace, women's rights, pregnant, we have your back. They ain't going to do that. One, their organization's being sued. The coach in the situation is a woman. And there's legal concerns here. Like, I'm not going to speak. So when Becky Hammond got up the other day and spoke, give me cut one of Becky Hammond, and I want to see what the our legal expert, because he had a lot to say. By the way, I have to say, too, I'm mostly pro-player. So I hope everyone out there listening, when I'm saying, screw Tua, I don't usually do that. Fire this.
Here's some facts. I've been in either the WNBA or the NBA for now 25 years. I've never had an HR complaint, never, not once. I still didn't, actually, because De'Erica didn't file any. She didn't file with the players' union. She didn't file with the WNBA. Those are facts.
When I heard that, I was like, what? What did you just say about people fighting through and not reporting things or not pushing back?
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility, right? My impression of what Becky Hammond just said there, perfect.
Yeah, from a legal standpoint?
From a legal standpoint,
facts.
Perfect. Fact.
And there's a lot of gray area around it.
Yeah,
though.
Right. But if she's like, I am going to go say something, and I'd be like, don't say anything. I'm going to go say something. Okay, tell me what you're going to say. And she said that, I'd be like, perfect. No more words, no less words. Perfect. Because it is an easily verifiably true fact. And that's it. Right? So the question becomes, does that necessarily mean that because she didn't file an HR complaint that her treatment was good? It does not. Exactly. It doesn't correlate, but it's great PR.
Yeah.
She played that PR game right. She goes on to say other things that do imply that her treatment was good. She went on to say...
Yeah, fire this one.
To me, I mean, it just didn't happen. I'm sorry, the bullying. I spoke with her every day. If she wanted to practice, she practiced. If she didn't, she didn't. Over-the-top care, actually. Over-the-top care.
I'm less enthused with that as a lawyer,
okay.
Right? Because there are facts in there that could be proven and disproven through the testimony of other witnesses. It's not objectively verifiable in a freaking almanac or a piece of paper, right? The previous statement, we can look. Yep, no complaint ever made. Fact. doesn't matter what anybody else thinks they saw or remembers. It is a verifiable fact in black and white. These statements could be disputed through testimony of other people and their interpretation of those interactions, right? So it's not just what Becky Hammond thinks she offered. It's about what a reasonable person would have interpreted based on the interaction itself. So the question to, say, another Aces former, let's say former Aces player, because you're most likely to get that at some point in the future, in this 1 year from today, when I'm deposing a former Aces player, well, what did she say? She said, go ahead and play if you want to, or sit if that's what you want to do. And what was your impression of the way in which she said that? That she better play or she's going to be sitting, mm-hmm. right? It's about reasonable interpretations of not just the words, but the actions and the attitudes and the body language. And that's why other witnesses that saw it are going to be able to testify about it.
I'll also add in that the facts part of the cut, people tweeting out that, oh, Becky kept receipts. What does that even mean? That's the facts thing is, okay, those are the facts. But this one, that's her interpretation of a she said, she said.
Yeah, no. Receipts would be, here's a text message I sent to Derek Earth that says, you can play anytime you want. You cannot play anytime you want. The most important thing to us and to you is your health and the health of your baby. And then show that to that's receipts.
Right. not spoken face to face. I don't know what the tone was. I don't know what the delivery was.
Well, and it's not. We don't even know if it's a fact because we haven't heard, we don't know that it was actually, again, it can't be verified in paper. And there's a statement that if it's not written down, it didn't happen, right? That's what lawyers say. If it's not written down, it didn't happen. So, because Hamby's not going to get up there and say, yeah, that's exactly what she said to me. She's going to be like, no, that's not how it went. She said, she said in this instance.
Alex, I'm just going to say you're a rabid Aces fan. You're not. You're a media member, right? What do you think of sitting next to someone who is a big Aces fan and De'Erica Hamby has the ball in the game and people next to you, women, are booing her every time she has the ball?
Oh, I don't agree with that. I did hear it was pretty bad, too, that game.
I hate that so much.
Yeah.
I think it's gross.
Are you, and I know you a little bit, Steve, so you're probably the one who's like, hey, guys, all around telling the people who are booing, knock it off.
You know what's funny? Do you really want to know?
Yeah.
I have to look up the year. Yankee Stadium bleachers. Tyrone Mulholland is over from the Phillies. He's only a few starts into his reign with the Yankees. And I'm like, he's struggling. And the crowd is booing him. And I'm literally like, what are you doing? Right. How does this help him? So, yes. I will do that.
Yeah, I don't.
I am so pro player. And in a case like this, this is a workplace thing. Yeah. I don't know what happened, nor do you.
Yeah.
Right.
This is unconditional support because you root for the Aces. This could be a female on female deal. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I don't boo. Maybe the refs. I might boo the refs. I have to think about that. Maybe they might catch on. Not a fact. Let's take it back. I may have booed a ref.
All the opinions on the show we have to clear.
But I'm going to say this. I don't boo individual players. I never have. But I also am not the person that's going to start something and be like, hey, you stop booing and we got to talk about this before you continue booing. I wish I was more like that, but I'm not.
Really good stuff. Alex is coming back. She's the company today. For the 5 o'clock hour, Caleb Herring will react. He played football. It's a rough coaching.